This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This episode of the KMP Show is brought to you by Beckett Media. Beckett Media is the most trusted source in sports and pop culture collectibles, and now, with this exclusive promo code, FAN10, you can take 10% off anything from the NFL, MLB, NBA, and NHL. Guys, that's 10% off anything site-wide. Free shipping on select items within the United States. Visit voicesofwrestling.com/Beckett today to save. Welcome, everybody, to the KMP Show, episode number 9. I am your host, John Playtech.
He's got AIDS.
And with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Rich Craich.
Hello.
You want that cork? Here it is.
And go the other way.
It gets me every time.
Did you combine those now just to one, or did you just, were you quick on the finger there?
And I'm quick on the finger. I got I got the tablet with all the drops and stuff, and I feel like I'm like an electric dance music DJ.
Yeah,
oh,
you
guy.
Can go anywhere now. You could tour the world right now.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That's all you need, really. It's great. You just need a headphone that's only on one ear.
Right.
And then, or sometimes not on at all.
And then I gotta pinch it, and then I gotta pinch it to my shoulder, right?
Right, exactly. And
so
then
it looks like I'm doing something.
Yeah, and then you just hit things on your tablet, and it's just like,
right. And then
it
then
plays
like
electronic music, but you just like hit a button, and then like some ridiculous like weird noises happen, and then you hit another button, and then weird noises happen, and then you're good. And then
right, like a live reverb plugin, and then you take it on and off, and then you turn knobs and stuff.
But and then 7 million people come to see you in like Cancun or whatever, and it's great.
Right, exactly. And you get, I wonder how much those guys get paid, because there's always that one move where they're like, they're doing the thing, and they've got the one ear, they've got the one headphone on, and they're like they're pinched against their shoulder, and they're like, they're listening, and you could, but they're listening to something else. That's what they want you to think. They want you to think that they're like, they're getting ready to like, they're queuing up the next song. They're getting ready to drop something just mammoth on your bitch ass. And then they do that thing where it's like, as the music like slowly crescendos, like as it builds up, and it's like boo. Then they do that thing where they turn the knob emphatically,
yeah.
And they're like, and then it's like boom. And then I wonder if that does anything, or if that's just in the song.
Yeah, it's
all
just
the time.
I promise it's in. I don't know. I don't know, but I assume that's just in the song. And then the foam, starts coming out.
Right, the foam, and then they put their hands up and try to encourage you to like do the whatever that is, that hand thing. Where it's like they're just moving back and forth, kind of.
So I guess we're not going to be sponsored by any local EDM festivals at any point.
I don't think. You know what? We should do a live show, live podcast this summer. We're taking the show, the KMP show, on the road, sons of bitches. We're going to be at
Chicago.
We're going to do the tour.
I just did EDM Chicago. Oh, good. There's a website. Perfect. All right.
Thank you, God. Good.
Okay, let's see what we got coming up here pretty soon. You can do it. Do whatever you want to do, show wise. I'm working on this.
Yeah, you're getting our tour. It's really a tour. We should take the. I think we're at the point now. 9 episodes in. Well, really 8 episodes. We're recording the 9th one.
It's time to take it on the road. Yeah, it's time to take this thing on the road.
Right in Nashville, I think we could book like a, you know, not like. Not Allstate Arena, okay? I'm not going to be crazy about it.
Sears
but, you
Center,
know,
more Sears Center. Yeah.
Right, or you know, a nice civic theater, a civic amphitheater or something like that. I think we could fill that. You know,
yeah, the Odeum in Villa Park or something.
Right, or what's that place where the Chicago Fire, like, pretend they play soccer?
Toyota Park?
Yeah, we could sell a Toyota Park, right?
I don't know if we can. No, I don't think so.
It's not that big.
I think it can get kind of big. I mean, there's no, like, if we're just, like, people are on the field then. Like, people are in the stands and on the field.
Yeah, that'll be, like, the we'll, like, play electronic dance music and then
so
do the show.
We got Spring Awakening. That's coming up, I don't know when, but it's no longer at Soldier Field. Soldier Field said, please never come back. Get out of here. Oh, then there's Electric Forest, too. I think we want to do Electric Forest. That one, I think.
Electric Forest?
Yeah, that one I think is a little bit more open to dabbling in. I'm not saying that people that go to EDM festivals, you know, do any sort of drugs, but I think this one is more, you know.
Because
one, you have to
like
go through turnstiles and stuff, and like, yeah, sure, you know, you find. But this one, I think, is just like, hey, let's just gather here and like everybody just.
So is that where we can do the show? I just want to know.
It's
where
sold
we can
out,
set up
so we're gonna have to get. Yeah, it's sold out, but we're not buying.
Right,
tickets,
but we're
like,
press.
Right,
we'll
yeah.
Be press,
so June 23rd to the 26th. Yes, I can. Right. So there's
Lock
a subreddit, so we'll get on there. And
I don't. Well, we would record the show. I don't think we'd stream it, so we wouldn't need internet per se.
No, I'm going live. I don't know about you, but
okay. So now we have to create a site, a website that's got a content delivery network. Mm-hmm. And okay, all right.
I thought you were in on this. I don't know. I mean, the String Cheese Incident, Base Nectar, and Major Lazer are going to be there. So you got to bring. I mean,
the String Cheese Incident.
They're the
really.
They're
coming
lead,
out. He's
the
coming out of retirement.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Disco Biscuits. That's a cool name. I'm down with the Disco Biscuits. That's.
That is pretty good. What is the what
there
is that supposed
so
to be?
Thing. A Disco Biscuit?
No, no, no.
Or
the
a String Cheese
Incident is.
I don't know. Let's.
That's something you got to like attach a year to. Like, do you remember the String Cheese Incident? And it's like the string. But if you say like the String Cheese Incident of 1995, everybody kind of remembers it as a big thing. If you
They've
just say String Cheese
1993?
Incident,
1993? Huh?
They're a group.
They are.
Oh my God. This isn't really a thing. People don't actually do
their
this,
music
do they?
Has elements of bluegrass sounds as well as rock, electronica, country, funk, jazz, Latin, progressive rock, reggae, and occasionally psychedelia. All members write original compositions and sing.
What?
So there's our homework.
I gotta
for
listen
the day.
To some of this.
There's our homework for the day. Is
All right. So we gotta find the String Cheese Incident and playlist. We gotta playlist it, and we'll get that done.
Okay. All right.
And then we'll be ready to do the show.
So we'll do it.
I think a lot of crossover. I think it'd be a good place to do a sports podcast would be a electronic dance festival.
Yeah.
Dance
they love
music
sports.
Festival.
Yeah.
I think
they're on their phones. They're on their phones checking, you know, baseball, you know, see what the Royals are doing at every minute of the
right,
day.
They're on FanDuel. They're on, you know, they're going to SeatGeek, voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek to get their seats for the Cubs or Sox. You know, it's going to be great. But anyway, welcome to the KMP show.
What are we talking about?
I have no idea.
What's going on?
I don't know. I'd be open if the show has been growing, and we thank you all for sharing the show
yes.
with people. And the show's been doing, it's been growing incrementally. And if you subscribe on iTunes, search the KMP show. You can also go to kandpshow.com to find the Audio Boom feed and subscribe manually there. You can follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. You can follow Rich at Voices Wrestling, and you can follow the show at K&P show. That's at K&P show. And the show has been going great. You guys have been sharing it and got some rave reviews from somebody on Twitter. I'm pretty sure I don't know if you saw it, Rich. I retweeted a guy. Like, there
yeah,
were
that
like
guy was
five
all
tweets
in.
Right in a, he was all in on the show. I think he might have been a little high. Like just a tad.
Well, that's
like
our target demo. That's definitely our target demo. So that's fine.
Like, okay, is people that are high as balls and are like, dude,
yeah,
I really
so.
Love this show. This
you
is
can't
the
be
best
of
show.
Right. You can't be of the right mind and still like listen to the what did we just do for the past 5 minutes? Like, there's
Rift
no way you're
EDM music.
Yeah, there's like no way that you're like, hey, I'm fully functional. I'm at work, and you're like, oh, these guys are riffing on you can't be. It's got to be like 2 a.m. and you're like somehow you type something else on the internet and you come to our show and you're like, all right, well, whatever. And then you pass out, and then that's how our numbers go up. So. Thank you for
right,
passing
right.
out
you
while
set up the playlist.
Show.
You find a playlist. You're like, oh man, I was looking for electric dance music, but these guys are talking sports, and that's pretty cool. Oh.
And then you pass out. Yeah,
right. And then you pass out. Yeah, but that guy was
I'm
all
joking.
In.
We're awesome. That we're actually really awesome. So
I think we're pretty good. I told I told my agent I met him finally booked that gig that I was talking about. Finally got done. But I told my agent, I'm like, hey. You know, the goal is, the pipe dream is that eventually we can sell this show to, like, Sirius or something. And express some interest, so we may have some representation willing to help
I
sell
like
the
that.
Show. To nobody.
There are a lot of really bad, like, honestly, and I don't care. Like, look, I'll do 2 a.m. I'll do 3 a.m. I don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm confident enough that in our skills, and we've proven this, you and I have both on different, you know, we together, and then... You know, our,
no,
our
we didn't prove anything with the,
well, no,
with the
6-4-3
sports.
We proved persistence, though. Right?
Yes, we proved that we could be bad at, we could be horrendous, but still want to do it.
Right. We don't give up. We didn't give up. I mean, we did that thing for God like 4 or 5 years or whatever. Like,
we did
like,
two shows a week when
yeah,
we didn't know what the hell
that?
We were doing.
Just hot. But, but we're persistent. And then we sort of, you know, we obviously went our separate ways. Not, I mean, not like in I hate you, go hell. You're like our separate ways.
No, that
where,
was
you know,
the
I did
String
the wrestling
Cheese incident world. Of 2008.
Yeah.
That was
right,
it.
Right. But like,
the
so,
fuck
so, you
did
know,
you get, you got that kind, you got the Alberto dude. Come on. I thought we were the other kind of String Cheese household. We were living together at the time. It was a long story. So you started, yeah, and you started your wrestling
podcast.
Yeah,
we do the wrestling thing. You were doing, you know, obviously the Call of Duty, the gaming and all that sort of stuff. And then you explored on your end. You know, we modestly got, you know, compared to you, we modestly got and we built up a nice little fan base here at Voice of Wrestling. Not nearly, you know, as much as you did. But I'm just saying, like in terms of stuff, we've proven on multiple levels to be able to really kind of do this and make it work. And yeah.
Right. And do a show and actually like put on a show. And now we're getting better with the reads and the breaks and the this and the that. And it really is like it is.
We're doing a lot worse at getting to the topic at hand, though. That is actually getting worse as the shows go on. So
right, but I have a theory about that.
People like that, though.
And that's what I think. I think that because we don't have a set format. Like, listen, you guys have 2.5 hours to fill, or whatever, you know, plus breaks, whatever. But you guys have 2.5 hours to fill. We'd get there no problem. That wouldn't be a problem. You know, I've been a part of plenty of podcasts and plenty of long form stuff. And a lot of people, like some guys are like, no, we got to do like 2, 3, 4 hours. And I'm like, okay. But then when you start trying to not ramble, when you try to stymie diversions and tangents, you end up with a, in my opinion, a lesser product than if you just kind of weave and let yourself explore what, you know, what's off the top of your head. I don't know if a program director would actually would like that, but hey, whatever, you know, that's a bridge yet to come. But the show has been doing really well. I think the show is improving in quality and we're doing pretty good, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'd like to think so. No, we are.
Yeah, we are. We're pretty good. Yeah,
we're the best.
So search on iTunes. We're beating a couple on the new Noteworthy in Sports. We're beating a couple like daily, like radio shows. But I mean, they're radio shows. But usually, like daily radio shows with podcasts do pretty well on iTunes. More of gaming the algorithm, I guess. But we're doing pretty well. So you can find us on iTunes at the KMP Show. Be sure to subscribe. And I'm excited because, Rich, I woke up today and I was really excited. And I usually only get this way a couple times a year. Like on Christmas Eve, when I wake up Christmas Eve day, I'm excited because I know it's a holiday and I know everybody else is treating it as a holiday. So I can finally, people to have fun with and friends and family and stuff. And today I woke up and I was excited in a similar way because tomorrow I'm going to get to wake up. I'm going to get to make my coffee, do some morning auditions, and then come, I'm not sure what time. I want to say it's noon.
I know where you're going, so I think you're correct, but you haven't revealed it yet, but, you know.
I'm going to get to watch baseball.
Mm-hmm. The crack of that bat.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Baseball is going to come back. And this is going to be a kind of a baseball heavy show, a little bit nerdy, a little bit fun. We're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about the MLB draft. We're going to talk about draft lotteries. But after a break, I don't want you, if you don't like baseball, that's fine. After a break, don't go anywhere or go anywhere, but just further along in the show. Go somewhere. But in the show, within the confines of the show, after the break.
Don't leave, but like.
No, don't leave. Stay here with us. Stay here with us. I will be administering to Rich a Wonderlic exam. The kind of exam that the NFL players are taking right now at the NFL Combine. But I'm less excited about the NFL Combine and dicks falling out of shorts than I am.
That was the best. Is that not the greatest thing ever?
That a dude's wang just straight, and Rich Eisen went right to the double entendre, just right to it. Then that's why I love him. But then, why are they in underwear?
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, like that, especially like you know.
Okay, you know what? We're gonna talk a little bit about NFL draft because I watched some of it today. Yeah. What is the point? I remember when I was younger, especially when we started 643 Sports, I was really excited to watch the NFL draft. I don't know why. Probably a little bit more of like the NCAA football and Madden GM of me where I'm like, ooh, okay, who's got the fastest 40 time? Like when you would search prospects and you sort by 40 yard dash time.
Draft all those guys.
Like, all right, what do you got? 4-2-2? Hell yeah, get on
every
this
time
team.
They catch the ball and get hit. It just flies in the air because they can't possibly, you know, stand. Like,
but they are fast, damn it.
Yeah.
But and I used to love it. I used to like, oh yeah, this is amazing. And I didn't care about the drills, like the flashing your hips. I wanted to run fast in a straight line. Damn it!
Shit about that. Yeah.
And then bench press some shit. All right, and then jump really high. That's what football's all about. But I watched it today, and aside from the hilarity of a guy who's wearing underwear, and then by golly, his dick pops out if he falls down, nobody thought of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really, like, giant
wangs at the NFL draft.
Yeah, like, they tend to, you know, we all know, they tend to, you know, be a little bit more well-endowed than...
They're just big human beings. That, like,
yeah,
like,
and these guys are, like,
6'7".
Yeah, so, like... That those things are gigantic. Like put those away. Like let's let those be behind something. Like,
right. And you don't need to see the guy half naked, do you? Does an NFL scout really need to see, like, I mean, if you can see him, you will eventually, but on the field, do you have to see his quadriceps flexing?
Yeah, like that doesn't,
as he presses,
yeah, like I get, like,
run.
some guys want to see, like, they don't want to see a big stomach out there or whatever. But again, to me, what I always say is it's not going to matter, because it's going to show through if that guy, whether he has, if he has a gigantic stomach and he looks like a sloppy mess or whatever, he's probably not going to run a 4.40. So, like, I feel like it's not going to happen. And there's some other stuff, you know, as the combine was going on, I was, you know, watching some stuff, reading some stuff, and there were people arguing about certain guys 40 times. Oh, this guy had this in 40. I thought he was way faster. Oh, I thought, you know, I saw this guy and he looked like he was way faster on the field. And now I see him in this 40 time and he's not great or whatever. And part of me thinks of, and I get why they do a lot of this stuff, but like the whole idea of it, like get out of pads, get in your underwear and then run for 40 yards as like a like, why would a linebacker need to show how great his speed is for 40 yards?
Right.
Like, why isn't it just a, because people were saying, oh, that guy, oh, he looked like, I thought he was a lot faster than he was. And then they would say, oh, but his, like, you know, first 10 yards, you know, speed was great or whatever. And I'm like, why don't we care about that one? Like, that's the one I would care about.
Right. That's you want suddenness, burst.
Right. I don't need to see
you
run, you know, half the football field as a linebacker. Like, what do you would never do that in a game. If you're doing that, the team has already scored on you. That is, oh shit, we blew an assignment and the guy's running up the middle of the field and maybe I can chase him down or whatever. Like, you don't want that. Like, you want the guy for the first 10 yards, that explosiveness for the first. So I never really quite get what the 40 yard dash really tells you or like, I get it for wide receivers. That makes sense. You know, breakaway speed, that sort of stuff. But like, do we really need like offensive linemen doing it? It's just like this sort of like,
And the other thing I noticed, I was watching it today, and it took a guy like 45 seconds, and he was like from Texas A&M Kingsville or something, like some off the wall school, but he's like, I'm going to get my shot in the NFL, which means I'm going to be on a practice squad and then knee deep in coke and hookers. He took about 45 seconds to get set up, and he was in that classic sprinter setup, you know, where you're both your hands are down and then, you know, your legs are offset and you know, you're ready to just drive forward as quick as you can. And I realize, wait a minute, this is a sprinting, this is a track and field kind of thing. And a lot of these guys are track and field stars, DBs and wide receivers specifically. But there's only really one position that does that on an NFL field with a regular basis, and that's a defensive lineman, whether you're an end or a tackle, and you're trying to rush the passer. But even then, you're not going from that three-point stance into straight-ahead motion, or, you know, maybe you're trying to bull rush somebody, but you're trying to get to the outside. And so the NFL, like the hallmark of the NFL combine is the 40-yard dash, and it starts with a position that only one position on the field ever gets into, really. Why are DBs, don't you want to be able to see how quickly from a flat-footed, like, stance you can generate suddenness into a flat out run? Wouldn't that be more worthwhile?
Yeah, or the safety, you know, how quick he can backpedal and turn his head. And they do that sort of stuff, but it seems like you said, all the focus is on the 40-yard dash. And it's like, I don't really.
Right, the 40-yard dash and the bench press and the high jump too, even that after a fashion, because you're not wearing pads. You're not
wearing
helmets.
Yeah, and all of it
helmets.
In not football gear, which is the weirdest thing ever. It's like, okay, like, cool. I, like, you know, I, It's like having, you know, doing an NBA combine or something like that and having everybody be barefoot and play the game barefoot. It's like, why? Mm-hmm. Just wear shoes. Like, they're like, oh, well, I don't know. Like, let's see how tall he is without shoes on. It's like, who cares? Just wear, you're wearing shoes.
That,
like,
I saw that in an NBA documentary, and to this day, I don't understand it. It was
he Andrew wears shoes. It doesn't matter.
Like, right. It was Andrew Bogut. I remember it like it was yesterday. He was being tried out by these teams, and they're like, all right, we're going to measure you, and we're going to measure your wingspan, and we're going to measure your height. And the guy's like, take off your shoes. And Bogut did it. And I'm like, wait a minute. The only time his height really matters to you is when he's on the basketball court in
wearing shoes. Yeah, I don't get it.
You want him taller in shoes, don't you? Isn't that kind of the point? I don't know. But it's the NFL.
Moon boots. If he's wearing like riser, and then you could be like, dude, you're like 6'5". Why are you wearing those or whatever? You're not 7 foot, man. You're wearing that. But I think that would show through.
I think you'd realize a guy in like 4-inch stilettos.
Right. Like, I don't think that's going to be something like where during the testing, you're like, oh, what a fraud this guy was. Like, how do we not know that he was wearing, like gigantic shoes, like giant clown shoes. We should have known, damn it.
Yeah, he was wearing platform shoes with fish in them. I don't get it at all. It's crazy. Yeah.
Do you have the Disco Sue soundbite? We had that at 643 Sports, I think.
Did we?
I don't know. Oh, we had a lot of soundbites.
I gotta update.
Poor Blog Talk Radio. Like, their servers were just packed to the gills with us, like, uploading with, like, low res, like, really to like
we
horrible
had, like,
wave
three,
files.
We had three opens. We had three separate open
and it went for
opening
like
music.
4 minutes. It was great.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And you know what? You keep sharing the show, you keep subscribing on iTunes, eventually we'll get an intro. Because I always wanted to cover that. Why this show does not have an intro song. It just starts out with me doing a read and then et cetera. Because a lot of the big time podcasts, they have a song that starts out, or they have some kind of produced intro. And it's not for lack of trying. It's not because we're lazy. We did indeed try. It's just apparently it costs a lot of money to license music in the capacity that we want to use it. I was quoted originally. I was quoted $2,000 for a ska song, and I would get to, and that was yearly. And other places were around that, and it got to the point where I was on the phone with this woman, and I'm like, "Listen, can I call you and like, because I think she got a different impression about what I was trying to do. Like, oh, well, what project is it? What movie is going to be in, or TV show?" I'm like, no.
Me and this idiot, we're just going to talk about guys' dicks falling out during the NFL combine. Like,
right. And I'm like, it was equal parts emasculating as it was funny, because I was like, no, we're going to put it on our podcast. We're going to use it as an intro for our show. That's it. And she was like, oh, well, that'll be $2,000. I said, really? Like, dude, that's a lot. We can't afford that. She said, well, I can do $1,500 maybe. I said, listen, that's not even, you can take another $1,000 off and we're still out of the ballpark. And she's like, well, what radio station do you work for? And I was like, oh.
You poor thing.
We don't have one. It's just me. I was like, it's just me and a schmuck, and we're going to be making fart jokes and penis jokes. We're just, that's us. It's just two guys in their underwear. And she's like, oh, well, blah, blah, humana, humana. And she got off the phone. So that's why the Lefty Show, we did find a couple nice songs that I think would work.
Yeah.
They're just prohibitively expensive. So until we start, hey. Go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. Go to voicesofwrestling.com/Beckett, BECKETT. We could get ourselves an intro lickety split. But until then, we will be intro.
Pouring cold, yeah. Pouring cold.
I mean, and the other option is that we could just use one and say, fuck it, sue us. But I don't want to do that. Because that's starting off like on a really bad.
But we're content creators, and we want the fellow content creators to make money. So
that's true. And you know what? That's their price, the $2,000. Like initially I balked at it. I was like, what, $2,000? What the? Come on, get out of here! And then I thought, I'm like, wait a minute. When I get a national commercial, they do it, usage for years. And I would, if somebody was like, they're like, I want a national TV spot. I'm like, all right, and I quote them a price. Or they're like, oh, well, I was thinking only a couple $100. I would be insulted. I'd be like, fuck you. Right? Like, look at what you're trying to do with this. I want to get something on the front end of that. And this is the going rate. This is the just a little bit below union wages, what you'd pay a SAG after a, you know, voice actor. This is a fair price. And if somebody told me, like, no, I was thinking more like $150 and I'd own it forever, I would tell them to go fuck themselves. And I realized, you know what? Yeah, maybe I shouldn't bitch about $2,000. But and it wasn't like I was mad at her. I told her, I was like, listen, I just had no idea what the price was. It is your price. I'm not mad. I just simply can't afford it. That's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe someday we will. Hey, if we get sold to Sirius, baby.
There it is.
Boom. We can't. Who's on Sirius? Really? Were you the bad wrestling show? We could do that. Replace them.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But yes. Yes, they are. I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. We're on good terms. No, we don't care about them. Yeah, they suck. So I always got to remember, because like sometimes people like us. No, there's no heat. Yeah, no. Nice insider term. Yeah, there's not legit heat.
Kayfabe.
They don't know who we are, and we don't know who they like. It's I forget, because like sometimes we're on like good terms with people and that sort of. But it's like short lived, because Joe and I are both raging dickheads, so we always cause like arguments between. Oh, people, that's
it. That's awesome.
A little bit of a joke. But no, but like, yeah, no, I'm trying to think. Because like sometimes like there are people like legit, or I try to think of like, hey, those guys like might need them down the line to like be cool with us, you know.
Right.
If they're like, hey, they're in a different stratosphere, who cares about them? We don't care. Like, yeah, screw those guys. But you never know but those guys, yeah, they kind of suck. So that's fine.
How do they what's their sound quality like?
Very good. Okay. They do it from a radio station, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. All right.
Think.
That's good. That's
I think they're live in studio, so they rent some studio space. So it's good. It's not like our show. So
our show's pretty good.
Great. No, we sound fucking great. So
that's how I always compare. I don't care what your viewership is for your podcast.
How do you sound?
I don't care. When I put you onto my headphones, how do you sound on different speakers? Do you sound good on my studio monitors as you do my JBLs? Do you sound as good in my Audio Technicas as you do on my earbuds when I'm at the gym? That's how I judge a podcast first. Of course, there's viewership numbers later, but if you come at me with a podcast, you're like, yeah, look at what we're doing in viewership. Our podcast is better than yours or whatever. And I listen to it and you're on a laptop microphone and your guest is being piped in through another laptop speakers that the other laptop is picking up on the microphone, I'm going to say, I don't care what your viewership is. Your show sucks because it sounds like absolute dog shit. But I'm just taking a shot at everybody I can think of right now.
Yeah. Anybody else?
The
Dead Cast. Any religions you want to?
The Dead Cast.
Oh, you don't like? Okay.
Well, no, just from a sound perspective. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I don't listen for the content. Let's see.
Baseball. Baseball's good.
Yeah, baseball. I'm happy.
Let's talk about baseball. Yay.
Yay. This show isn't just an utter stream of negativity.
So now let's talk about negative. Let's get some negativity in here. You're right. We are
pretty negative.
Oh, man. That's kind of us, though, right?
Yeah, it's not. I try to rationalize it this way. We're not being negative. We're just being real. We're being real about things.
Do you want us to come and lie to you? You don't.
No, you don't want to. You don't want us to tell you like, oh, Derrick Rose just tries his hardest, doesn't he? I hope the Bulls win all the time. You don't want that. The Bulls, Derrick Rose is the gigantic pussy who's taking himself out of games because he's lazy and doesn't want to, and the team's bad, and the Bulls are probably going to be bad for a while. There you go. That's the kind of hot take that we give. When did hot take become pejorative, by the way?
I don't know. Yeah, I've always wondered that, of what exactly kicked it off or what started the word hot
right,
take. Because now it's just like a comment. Like, there's not one sports podcast in the world that doesn't mention hot take at some point. Like,
right. And it's no longer like, oh, I got a hot take, like I need to get this to air. It's hot take is now like, oh, it's a verb now.
Yeah. And people only use it, I feel like most people only use it to make fun of something now. Like, nobody legitimately is like, hey, I have a hot take here on this story or whatever. Everyone's like, okay, yeah, this is gonna be really good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the second you say that, everyone's like, well, this is gonna be stupid, so okay, what? Like, you know, or like, oh, look at this hot take from Stephen A. Smith or whatever. It's like that. It's not necessarily
right.
like no like real writer or reporter or podcaster or whatever is like, hey, John, here's my hot take on baseball season, and like, you'd be like, oh, let's hear this one. Like, I'm excited to hear what you have to say. Like, I would say, like, that you would
go, I'm interested,
like,
because I think you will bring a unique perspective.
Yeah,
and
if I say that,
blah,
hey, John, I have a hot take for you, you're going to go, okay, well, okay,
lay
all right.
Lay it on me, brother. Let's
hear
it.
What's this stupid thing going to be? Yeah, so that's, yeah, it is very odd. I don't know who,
It's, and I know it. I know the genesis is from ESPN's First Take. It's like an amalgamation of maybe Hot Stove and First Take, but the idea is that the rush to say something, anything, to be, to either differentiate yourself by being, having a differing opinion or a contrarian opinion, or just to be first with the news, sometimes leads you, oftentimes leads you to say things that in a vacuum are pretty fucking stupid. But I just, you know what? Sometimes there's room for contrarian views, I think is what I'm trying to say. There's room to think, you know, hey, maybe you shouldn't be so mad about this, or et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, baseball season is almost upon us. We get to watch fake games. When, where can I catch some split squad action?
Today the White Sox were playing a split squad game. I don't know if it was actually showing up on any, it wasn't on MLB.com. I don't think so. I know there was, who's it? Boston was, somebody was playing today, like a weird sort of,
okay.
Cause they do the two, you got like split squad games. And then you have like the Boston Red Sox take on Boston College, or you know what I mean?
Oh, like that's something right. Like that was like, today. Yeah.
Like you have these weird, like Notre Dame comes down to like get their shit pushed in by like the Yankees. You know what I mean? Like they just have
right,
those
and
weird,
it's like the Yankees D squad too. And they just put 10 on them or something.
Yeah. No, I know it was a few years ago. I think the Pirates lost to a college team, but I forgot. I could be wrong on the exact one, but I remember somebody lost to a college team not that long ago, and it was just to be fair too, it was also like I think that was like the later in camp, so I think all their like good players had already went to wherever or gotten ready for the season, so I think everybody that was left was either like newly drafted, like rookie ball guys, so like some of these guys are like 18-19, you know, those sort of guys are like
right.
You know,
so
17 year olds from like Caracua
team.
Yeah, like right. So they're like, I don't even know the language, and like I have no idea what's going on here, so like yeah, I get like
mm-hmm.
that maybe a team of like 21-year-old, 22-year-old like college guys, you know what I mean, like that they can maybe win a game against 18-year-olds or whatever, but you know, it's still, it very rarely happens though, so that tells you just the how good MLB teams are at selecting. Even the lower levels of talent are just so good, they're better than anybody you've ever played baseball with, basically,
right?
Like the mm-hmm. worst guy on the rookie team is better than anybody you've ever played with. So
I saw Tim Dennehy pitch, and I don't think he ever got a cup of coffee professionally, but he was a left-handed pitcher who threw 90, 92, 93, and the guy was a fucking god. The guy was better at pitching than any other like person was at their position on both teams. He was that good. And he would throw you a 93 mile an hour fastball and then an 85 mile an hour curveball that would, the bottom would just drop out of it. And you couldn't touch him because he was just, you know, he was going to get drafted or going to go to Texas, I think. And I think he ended up crapping out. But, you know, if I was left-handed and threw 93 miles an hour, God damn it, I'd be in Major League Baseball.
Yeah,
how do you fuck that up, Tim Dennehy?
So I have Tim Dennehy's career register here, so you can go.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. He's a completely irrelevant player to most people. We're just kind of putting up the idea that, like, John faced him, and it was just this guy that, like, and I remember going to that game because everybody was like, oh my God, Tim Dennehy's going to be here or whatever. And then, like, just watching him just, like, dazzle, and like it was a buzz around this guy, like, oh my God, like, and we're not from like some podunk like middle of like North Dakota thing, or you know what I mean, like,
right,
there are probably a lot of, like, you could understand that a lot of good players would sort of come out of this area, and there have been a few, you know, good players here and there out of the, you know, the suburbs of Chicago or Chicago mm-hmm. in general or whatever, but this guy had that sort of aura around it where it's like, oh my God, like, you got to see this guy pitch. Here are his career numbers. Rookie ball with the Yankees, he went 5-1 with a 3.71 ERA.
Okay.
Not bad. Low A, 2-1 with a 3.68 ERA.
Was that the same year or was that?
That was the next year. So we put the one year, 10 games in rookie ball, and then 16 games the next year in low A, which unfortunately he wasn't starting at that point. So that can kind of tell you arm trouble or so some weird mechanics or something going on there. And then that was it. Then he played independent ball for 3 years and now he's gone. He played independent ball for 1 year and now he's gone. He had a 964 ERA for the Southern Illinois something in the Frontier League, the minors of Marion, Illinois. And then he got traded to the Windy City Thunderbolts and had a 5.94 ERA. And now I don't know what he does.
And that's the independent league?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
So.
And this was a guy who at 18 was dominating everybody around him. Everybody. He was untouchable. And then he washed out. of professional baseball, not even Major League Baseball, couldn't even make it out of low A. That's how good the guys that you see playing, that you're going to see play tomorrow, that you're going to, that we get to watch start playing again, that's how good those guys
and
are.
And it also shows, and I think a lot of ways, and this will probably be a good lead into to our topic, it shows the volatility of like baseball prospects or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, if I had shown up to that game and seen, because I remember, I don't remember the exact line, but he destroyed you guys, right?
Yes, it was, let's see, high school games were 7 innings, I want to say. I think he went six, maybe six and, no, I think he, maybe complete game. Boehmer couldn't touch him. Boehmer, Justin Boehm, the kid, the catcher, the hotshot catcher who was flashing a letter he got from the Reds around in the locker room one day. He goes, oh, look at this. I got something from the Cincinnati Reds. Boehmer was, and who before the season was like, I think I can hit 20 home runs this year. He had nothing. He couldn't touch him. It was great. He had a major league pop-up, though. It was a big-ass pop-up, but that was about it. Yeah, he was something to behold. Oh. But I don't remember the specific line.
Tim Denny, he is the pitching coach for Oak Park River Forest. I've probably seen him. I used to live right by there, so I probably saw him coaching at some time. So
there, well, you, there go. You go. So
next time I have to go say hi. How's it going?
How's it going?
How's it going? Ball? Yeah, go.
Yeah, go fucking, just keeping with your raging dickhead, how is independent ball? Go fuck yourself. All right, see ya.
Yeah, all right, see ya.
How does it feel to be a failure of a professional baseball player and something? I don't know.
But yeah, the volatility of drafting, developing, and like, it's so hard. Like, and I guess this goes a little bit to our combine thing. Like, with the NFL, you have a pretty decent idea. Of course, there are gigantic flameouts, like we've seen in the past few years, guys mm-hmm. that have just been like top 10 picks, and then within 2-3
Vince
years,
Young's
they're gone.
Coming back. No, Vince Young's coming back.
Yeah, and then they're gone because it's like, all right, well, sorry, like, never mind. You were this dynamic, like, great, unbelievable player. Like, you sort of got weeded out through the combine, and still you get to a team, and you know, maybe even the first year you're with that team, they sort of cover up these things. They figure out, okay, we got it. And then, like, within 2 years, you're gone for injuries or any other number of purposes. NBA, a little bit less volatile. You kind of have a decent idea, but mm-hmm. then again, you know, 2-3 years ago, we saw number one pick Anthony Bennett. He just got cut again today from, I think, his fourth different team.
Ooh.
And that's kind of the end of the line for him, I think. Like, he might be able to tag along with the D-League or something, but like, if I'm him, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, I think I'm just gonna go away now, because like, you're not good, and like, people know you're not good.
Did Greg Oden ever play a minute of NBA basketball?
He played a minute, yeah, he did, for quite a while. He was mostly injury wise. Anthony Bennett had sort of been healthy the entire time, which is what makes him a unique case. But no, yeah, Oden is another perfect example of a guy who just couldn't stay healthy. Number one overall pick, you know, a guy that everybody said, oh, you got to take this guy, it's got to be Greg Oden. I mean, over Kevin Durant, it's got, and hey, everybody to a T says, hey, yeah, I probably would have taken Greg Oden. Like, everybody mm-hmm. will say now, oh no, I mean, Durant was so great and so dynamic. But at that time, everybody said, oh, dude, this dude's 7 foot. He's a monster. That's your guy. And then, you know, injuries take over. And baseball is even more. I mean, baseball, I think, is of all of them, just the most volatile. You don't really know. I mean, you just kind of get these guys and their arm explodes. They can't handle getting sent off across the country. Like, in any other, like, minor league baseball adds such a different dynamic to it as mm-hmm. well. Whereas the NFL, you get drafted by the
Cincinnati
Bengals.
Wait, the NFL, the draft, you're playing. You're drafted by
the Cincinnati Bengals, fifth overall. You go to the Cincinnati Bengals minicamp. You go to their training camp. You go play in Cincinnati, and you're gone. There it is. You know, NBA, yeah, you're going to go there too. You know, they have the D-League now, and there's some guys who will filter through the D-League, but nobody in the first round goes through the D-League. They mm-hmm. show up to Summer League as an Orlando Magic, and they play in Orlando or whatever. Baseball, you can be you're the number one overall pick. You the toast of the town in your high school or whatever, and then they send you to, you know,
sends you to fall ball. They send
So you're in Arizona. Yeah, you're in Arizona.
You're living with
a
host family.
Yeah, you're in a host family in Arizona with two people at the game or whatever, and then you get sent to, you know, Venezuelan Winter League or whatever. You do that. Then you come back and then you play for, you know, the Sioux Falls Timberlands, or you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that's where you go. And then you play a year in North Dakota, and you're like, I'm really shooting down North Dakota a lot today, but I apologize.
Yeah, what's your problem with North Dakota?
I apologize any of our beautiful state, but you know what I mean? Like, so that's like, right. you're from New York City or something, or you're from Texas, and you know, people, 10,000 people go to your games because they loved this whole giant thing, and you're this, or California, anywhere in California, you know, those big mm-hmm. marks, that huge, you know, high school markets we know in California that just produce players like crazy. You're that guy. You're the star of the town and all that. And then now you're riding buses in, you know, Washington and going from Washington, North Dakota to Idaho. And that's what you do now. Like,
right,
you're
playing in a league
that
would have had us commentate games and be on the radio.
That's
the kind of league you'd be playing in, is that league. Yeah. We, Glad we didn't do it, but still, I think it would have been fun.
It would have been pretty sweet, but yeah, that definitely like made no sense financially whatsoever. But yeah,
no,
cool.
Because we would be living with a host family, and we'd have to go out there. And for the 643 Sports Days, Rich and I received an offer, an honest to God offer
Sonoma.
From a real
it was Sonoma,
thing.
California, I believe.
Yes, they wanted us to go do the radio play by play and color, as well as local radio promotion for a collegiate summer baseball league, a prospect league, which means we would have gotten to see some of the probably not the high end guys, probably not like the number one, like, you know, like the David Prices of the world. But we would go get to see a guy like Gordon Beckham, who was, you know, going to go near in the first round, but where in the first round? You got to go to differentiate yourself. We would have been doing play-by-play radio.
Yeah, Palm Springs Power was the exact name. Now I remember that. So.
but then I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, all right, what's it pay? And they're like, we could pay you $500 a month, and then you'd have to, and I'm like, okay, what about living expenses? Like, you're on your own for that. And you have to do local radio. And you have to do all this. And it's just, it was like, wait a minute. Do you want employees or do you want interns that will do your radio crap for you? But it would have been fun to see the young prospects. And like tomorrow, I'm just going to sit on my couch and just drink in. I'm going to crank the sound and I'm going to get to drink in that baseball, that arena, or that field sound. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked about it a few weeks ago. It's just that.
Oh, I can't wait.
Like the dink, dink, like when you hear like the right. like the donut fall into the ground or whatever, you know, like the batting circle and the guy's up and then or like right people putting their helmets away in the dugout and you hear that kind of dink, dink, dink.
Like, right. And the sound, the pong, the two bats make when they are clunked together in the bat holder, the boom, like that thing. It's not as tinny as I can't make a good wood on wood sound. I'm sorry. But Rich, to your point, I did some work. I think we both did a little bit of research on the MLB draft because I had a thought, and it was sparked by seeing a story. As I pull up our run sheet here, our story about the MLB Players Association, their head saying it would be beneficial to look into a draft lottery. This is from the Associated Press. I want to say it says. At some point very soon, Major League Baseball and the MLBPA will sit down to begin discussions about the next collective bargaining agreement, which expires after this season, by the way. The current CBA expires on December 1st. Baseball is going on 21 years of labor peace, and I can't imagine either side wants a work stoppage. Of course not. Among the many items to be discussed between now and December 1st is a draft lottery, similar to the systems used by the NBA and NHL. MLBPA Chief Tony Clark said it would be, quote, beneficial to explore the possibility of a draft lottery. Here's what he told Ronald Bloom of the Associated Press. Quote, it will be beneficial to look at that, Clark said, and not look at it in a vacuum, but appreciate whatever it is that we attempt to negotiate there or propose there, that it ties into the other moving pieces and doesn't create an imbalance. There has been increasing concern within baseball about tanking, i.e. being bad for the sake of stockpiling high draft picks. MLB's draft order is currently set in reverse order of the standings. A draft lottery would mean the worst team would not necessarily get the top pick. And after I saw that, and with baseball coming, I decided to do a little research. And I wanted to look at, here's my premise, if you'll allow me to expound. My premise is this. I want to look at to see if there's a substantive difference between the first overall pick and picks, let's say, 2 to 10. I picked 1 to 10 because that's a third of the league and about what you would assume for a draft lottery, maybe. And it was also a little bit easier with all the manual, number crunching that I had to do. And Baseball Reference I used Baseball Reference's wins above replacement for this. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people don't like it. Rich, right? FanGraphs is considered to be the be-all, end-all for war.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of... I actually prefer the Baseball Reference one, actually.
Oh, you
do? Over the FanGraphs. I do. Because the Baseball Reference one uses, I think, defensive runs saved, which is the Baseball Info Solutions sort of hand-counting... stuff, which I prefer that over UZR. UZR has some weirdness to it, and that FanGraphs uses UZR. So I'm actually a Baseball Reference WAR guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm a B WAR guy myself, so there you go.
Okay, you're a B war. Oh, that's batting war, right?
No, that's baseball reference wars. If you see F war, that's Fangraphs war, and then B war is the baseball reference war.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go. Now you know. But that was my stat of choice, and I did from 2000 to 2010. Again, it's only 10 drafts, so there are sample size. There can be sample size issues, and I didn't get into p value and confidence intervals and all that crap because it really hurts the brain, and it's not really that important for a sports podcast that I run with my friend. So. Unless we're getting paid for it, Rich, I'm sorry. I will calculate the confidence intervals and p-value the minute we start getting checks to do this from like Sirius or any other streaming site. Then I'll do it.
Absolutely fair.
Right? But now it's like, all right, this was a couple cups of coffee and I was proud of it. The total war, and I want to establish a difference because, and I used war, which is an accrual stat, and my point is this, my reasoning for war is this, and using total war by each draft pick, regardless of whether they were traded, cut, a free agent acquisition later on in their career, my supposition is this. The purpose of the draft is to identify talent, both talent now and future talent. And it doesn't matter if the player changed teams because that player is still that player. And because of the uniqueness of baseball, isn't very likely to be changed all that much by the people around him. Again, whether traded or on a bad team or acquired in free agency by another team, war is war. The player is his war. And I found the first overall pick from 2000 to 2010, which as you start getting into 2011 and 2012 drafts, a lot of those guys aren't here. 182.6 total war from the first overall pick from 2000 to 2010, and picks 2 to 10 are 800 is in a total war of 810.2. That means that gives a war per pick of 16.6 for the first overall and 8.184 for picks 2 to 10. Wow. Per pick. Now, that's
what was the data set? How far back did you go? I don't know if you actually said that.
2000.
2000. Okay, all right.
2010 to 2000. Again, it's only 10 years. I could do it more if Baseball Reference made it easier to import like that kind of stuff into a spreadsheet. But right now it's kind of hard because you got to download it and then upload it again. So it's on the surface, it looks as though the first overall pick tends to be twice as valuable as picks 2 to 10. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. What about games played? Because total war kind of favors the drafts from farther back on from back down the road. And I did a per game thing, and that went 4.2 for the first overall pick to 4.05 from picks 2 to 10. The problem with that is that I was including pitchers, and I broke it down per game, and then I did war per 150 games.
Right.
So wrapped up in that is a theoretical pitcher that has 150 games. It didn't really work. So then I went through MLB year, just seasons. It was harder to do. I had to hand calculate most of it. So here's the final number. The general war, Baseball Reference wins above replacement, that you can expect from the first overall pick given 2000 to 2010, you can expect an average 2.403 wins above replacement per year from the first overall pick. Picks 2 to 10, you can reasonably expect 1.699 or 1.7 to keep it simple. And that's an increase of, or a difference of, if I did my math correctly, I want to say about 40%, 2.4 yeah. divided by 1.7. Yeah, it's about 41%. So there's a difference, but is it really such a big difference that you have to try to put up a barrier to the number one overall pick? Is it like... The idea, you know, what's the goal here? What's the goal with all of this to prevent tanking? Why would a team or why would a league really care about that if the end result is a possible franchise player?
Right. Yeah. And there's been many studies and debates and stuff about this idea of that number one overall pick and how valuable it really is. And I'm glad you sort of broke it down in that way too, because I haven't seen it exactly broken down the way you did. So that mm-hmm. that's some nice insights. There, it's a tough one because, as we said, it's so volatile. Because actually, what I'm gonna do here, while you were doing that, I went over those guys because I don't know if you knew which guys were which, or were you just sort of running numbers just to sort of see and try to not let your sort of knowing who these guys are let it cloud sort of the judgment.
Oh no,
the stats,
no,
which,
no, that was yeah. part of the. I looked at all of them because that was my favorite part. I was going through the draft. Yeah. By the way, the year 2000, I think it was the year 2000. That draft is hideous. That top 10 is bad. All right. Anyway,
but here are your number one overall picks. And I want you, John, sort of as I'm doing this, maybe let's put this at the level of, I'm trying to think of the best way to, let's say generationally good, like a guy that like in all, maybe not like an all, not a surefire Hall of Famer, but like a guy that you can say in his era was one of the best, or like okay. really, you know, changed a franchise. Maybe that. Maybe if just a simple question of this guy changed a franchise or multiple franchises.
All right.
And I use that sort of, it's vague, but I think it'll sort of work for this.
Right, so, kind of like the eye test, an eye
right.
test of sorts.
Yeah, so
all
when
right.
I say this guy's name and you go, oh yeah, wow, he was definitely a guy that was a huge part of whatever team it was that he went to. 2000 was Adrian Gonzalez, first baseman.
Yes, big contributor.
Yeah,
big guy.
San Diego Padres, Dodgers, all that sort of stuff, still kind of kicking it. Joe Mauer.
This sucks because I have a personal affinity for him.
Oh, he's plummeting now, but that guy was a dude for a bunch.
Right,
of years.
Up until 28, he was the reason people went to Twins games to see Joe Mauer. I mean, if right. only for that, but and a very good statistical contributor to his team. So yeah, I'd throw him in there.
All right, Brian Bullington. Okay,
no.
Move on. Delmon Young. He very negatively enhanced a lot of teams by
yes.
being a piece of shit. So speaking of pieces of shit, Matt Bush. Have you ever read anything about that guy?
No.
Oh yeah. Do whenever you have a chance.
Oh no. What did he do?
He gets a little rapey sometimes. So.
Oh, that's why he wasn't.
Yeah.
In
that's why he missed a lot of time. If you're running his numbers and you're wondering what is this like 5-year gap in Matt Bush's career, like that's
oh.
that one. So yeah, there you go.
All right, well,
2005 Justin Upton.
Yes,
yeah, I think so too.
I think that's up there.
Luke Hochschaver in 2006. Not really. He's just kind of a bullpen guy. Like he's fine, he's good, but it's not
right,
like,
but not yeah.
I don't think I need to ask this one, but David Price.
Lukewarm, I think.
Yeah, this Price guy, I don't know.
Could be,
book's still out on this guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to see. Give it three more seasons. We'll see where he's at.
Do it for me for at least a decade, and then we'll talk, buddy. All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, a 7-year peak isn't really going to do a whole lot for me, buddy. All
right.
Like, let's show him something. Tim Beckman, or Beckham. Sorry, not Beckman. That was the Illinois head coach, Illinois football head coach. Tim Beckham, Tampa Bay Rays. You just say no. He's
yeah, no bad.
So, Steven Strasburg.
Yes.
He's although
despite the ligamentary nature of his
yeah he's had a he'll have a very odd career when it's all said and done. Like people mm-hmm. are gonna kind of be like he's always gonna be one where I think people are gonna go, man, that guy's the best. I just never quite got to that level, but
right. But he was a guy that he was good right off the bat. Like
oh, yeah.
What did he? How many games did he pitch in the minors before like he was drafted and then the season started? And then he pitched like at the end of the season, didn't he?
I think so. Yeah, it wasn't long for him.
Almost
yeah,
like was, right to Major League Baseball. He was
yeah, he was pretty well ready to go. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'll move on. Bryce Harper.
Yes,
I mean yeah, that's a good pick.
Of course. Aside from the need to be choked by Jonathan Papelbon, but
2011 Garrett Cole from the Pittsburgh Pirates, very good pitcher.
Yes, very good, but you know early on in his career, so I'd say. Good, but you know, is he at the point of like a Adrian Gonzalez or Joe
yeah,
Mauer in terms of?
Yeah, he's not quite that level mm-hmm. yet, probably. But 2012 Carlos Correa, I think
not there yet, but
anything,
probably
yeah.
will be. Yeah,
yeah, barring anything horribly happen, yeah, mm-hmm. he's going to be there. Mark Appel, no, he's bad. That guy was a man too, but he yeah just.
What did he, let's see what have you been doing, Mark Appel? All right, he's in the Pacific
don't,
Coast.
Oh, don't look. Don't stare directly at it. No,
oh.
I told you. I warned you.
Oh, what are you doing?
Doesn't he have like a? He's got like a 9 ERA one of those years or something like that. Yeah, he's
oh,
he's not on the Astros anymore. I'll tell you that. He's not in their system.
Yeah, last year, 2015, AAA in the Pacific Coast League, 1.39 across 68 innings pitched, 4.48 ERA, 1.39 WHIP, and almost four walks per game is his average.
Not ideal. Brady Aiken, who's had many injuries, and he doesn't even count because the Astros didn't even sign him. That was a point of contention as well. The Astros did not sign him, and arm troubles and a bunch of stuff. That's a story for another day. And then 2015, it's still super young, but Dansby Swanson, he's already been traded from Arizona, but I don't know if that's necessarily a reflection on him, more so Arizona and the way they're sort of building their team and that sort of stuff. So he's there, but I don't really quite. I mean, he got traded for Shelby Miller this year. He's now on the Atlanta Braves system, but he's 2015. I mean, there's really nothing to glean from him. So out of those, I think you said, so Carlos Correa, we're going to say a no right now, and that's basically just because of how young he is.
Right.
Right, like we don't know. I mean, this next year he could be
awful. Not saying he can't be, but it's too early to tell.
He probably should be. Right. So we got Adrian Gonzalez, Joe Mauer, Justin Upton, David Price, then Strasburg, Harper, and then either Cole, but we could sort of see on him. So one, two, I'll remove Cole just for the purposes of this. So we have one, two, three, four, five, six guys out of that the last
six of 15.
Yeah,
franchise, a team that you wouldn't feel bad trying to tell your fans, like, you know, you put him in the promo package that you send to fans, and you put his picture in the newsletter, and you're like, come see Adrian Gonzalez, Joe Mauer, like these are the guys. So of the first round picks in the last 15 years, six are definite yeses and two are probably will be's.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
I think that's fair.
All right. Well, that's, you know,
for the volatility of baseball, it's not bad at all.
Right. Now, if you want to, just as a quick aside, if you'll indulge me, because I saw this and I can't imagine a worse year because, the total WAR of
the 2000 MLB draft?
Yes.
Okay.
From 2 to 10. From 2 to 10.
Oh, who are these people?
6.4 total WAR from 2000.
And like 5.9 of that is Rocco Baldelli, probably.
It's like, right. Rocco Baldelli is the only guy. Rocco Baldelli is that guy.
Oh, God, this is a bad draft.
Starting at number 10, Joe Torres never made it to the major leagues. Number 9, Padres, Mark Phillips never made it to the major leagues. Matt Wheatland, the Tigers at number 8, never made it to the major leagues. Matt Harrington of the Rockies never made it to the majors. Then at number 6, our guy, Rocco Baldelli, 10.2 total WAR. Then Justin Wayne, a negative career WAR. Mike Stadulka at number 4, never made it to the major leagues, a number 4 draft pick. Luis Montanez, number 3, negative 1.2 for his career, and Adam Johnson, negative 1.1 for his career. Number 1 overall pick was Adrian Gonzalez. So out of the top 10, like two guys turned out to be any kind of good. And the rest, if you just go down, Chase Utley was 15, and all right, but the rest of that first round is just
You got Adam Wainwright at 29, which is
okay,
bad,
yeah. Kelly Johnson at 38 in a sandwich pick, but the rest of that draft is just bad. But you know what? Here's the funny part. If you look at all the guys that never made it to the major leagues, they're all from high schools, all of them. And that's probably part of the volatility is you're drafting guys straight out of high school, and there isn't maybe that isn't a partial explainer for why you don't see as much volatility in something like the NFL or college drafted players in the NBA, where you're drafting guys out of college that have done 2-3 years in both the NBA and the NFL. And so their bodies are more mature. They're a bit more mentally mature, but this way they have already made it past the whatever injury nexus is really there that weeds out.
And that's what I always bring up, because people bring up like the maturity thing of going to college and that sort of stuff. And I don't know if that's I don't really necessarily believe in that. Mm-hmm. To all extent. Well, that's another conversation for another day or whatever. My biggest thing, though, that I would say is, like you said, the injury thing of that. That's really what separates a lot of these people. Is we don't really realize that is that guys that make it to the major leagues professional sports, NBA, NFL, NHL, whatever you want to say, a lot of times those are just guys that are just have these freak bodies that can withstand doing this insane stuff. And in baseball, that's particularly because it's like any pitcher that makes it to the major leagues, you're just a freak of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just are wired weirdly where your body doesn't explode every single time it does this weird motion. You know what I mean? Like, and right. You might have one Tommy John, but then your body is so crazy enough that it can recover from that, and then you're okay for the rest of your life or whatever. Whereas some people, every time they throw, it's, oh, this hurts. Oh, my shoulder exploded. Oh, my elbow exploded. Like, that's the minor leagues are guys that just, mm-hmm. their elbows and shoulders explode all the time. And it's like, all right, well, that's the end of that. And, like, you try to rehab, and it doesn't work, and then you're done. And, like, mm-hmm. that's it. So you're done.
And for whatever reason, and it seems to happen, you know, it's not the end of puberty, but 18, 19, 20 years old, baseball researchers have found is right where that injury nexus occurs. For whatever reason, whatever's going on in the average male body at that point, that is where you will find out. And probably a lot of it has to do with whether you go to college or you start playing professional baseball. If you're good enough, baseball becomes your job. Even at, you know, a college, you are playing a lot of baseball.
You're are you taking saying a lot of student BP. Athletes don't focus no. on schoolwork first among over everything? Hold on, bring this back a little. What?
Yeah, I know. Call me crazy.
They're going pro in something other than sports.
Right, I know. I saw the
commercial.
I saw
told me that.
Right, I saw the guy in scrubs on the basketball court.
What are you talking about, though?
Right, and the woman in high heels and the boiler suit, you know, going up for a layup. No, it becomes
but
your
you're
job.
Talking about something else. I don't know what you're talking about, but
yeah, this is a, and
you're wrong.
And are you what? No, come on. It's not like at the University of Illinois, I knew somebody who tutored athletes at the special building that athletes have designated for their studies, and it's not like they had answers from all the tests and had all of the tutors do their homework for them. That didn't happen at all. I didn't hear any of that. Juice Williams didn't show up to African American studies ever, except midterm final. Yeah, well, I'm just saying, but. And speaking of the NBA, too, just real quick, I did this because for whatever reason, at basketballreference.com plays a lot nicer. They have a much better like historical draft research tool, and I can export a lot more data to like a spreadsheet. Here are the top 10 picks. Win shares per 48 minutes, 1996 to 2015. Okay, here's what you can expect in the NBA draft if you're in the top 10 of the lottery. I didn't do all the lottery picks because, again, a little bit lazy, but this is 1 to 10. We'll start at 10. At number 10 in the NBA draft, you can expect a 0.0854 win shares per 48. And win shares per 48, Rich, you're the basketball guy, yeah. but average is about 100. .100,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's
point,
about the yeah, well, no, that's, yeah, I'd say. I mean, that's probably pretty good. That's not bad, but
okay,
maybe not average, but you're okay. I would
you're
say.
Getting you warrant playing time and
yeah,
court time.
Average
and,
okay. is tough with NBA. It's kind of hard because like in what average NBA player is kind of tough to figure out versus like because there's only five guys in the court, so it's like
right.
You know what I mean? Like average is such a weird sort of mm-hmm. thing. But I suppose I would say that. But I mean, you have like all time greats that are probably just above that a little bit.
Okay,
but yeah, it's hard to say. But yeah, you're good. You're gonna get a lot of good playing time with that.
At number nine. Number nine through again 1996 to 2015, 0.109 is the win shares per 48 that you can expect. Then it mm-hmm. drops down at number eight to 0.075, then climbs back up a bit at number seven to 0.08. And then number six is 0.083. Number five is 0.091. Number four is 0.016. Number three is 0.013. Number two, oddly enough, is 0.093. By far, like the lowest higher pick of them all. So if you are an NBA team, it seems as though the number two pick is, I don't know, it seems like kind of like a poison pill. Like you don't want the number two pick. I don't know why that is.
That's strange. Yeah,
it really is, especially given from 1996 to 2015. So it is statistically significant. And the number one overall, the top pick averages 1.29 or 0.129 win shares per 48. So number one overall pick is a pretty good bet for let's see, what's that ratio? 0.129 divided by 0.93. So that's about 38%, right? Yeah. In the area of where,
so right about the same, yeah.
Where baseball is. And it's not that I dislike the idea of a lottery. My point is this, and I had kind of an epiphany today. When you institute a lottery, don't you kind of incentivize teams? You sort of incentivize teams to tank more for longer, because now it doesn't become getting the top pick in the draft. It doesn't, like, if you've got a Bryce Harper and the Nationals knew that they were going to be the team that can select Bryce Harper, or this year or last year in the NHL. When it was the Sabres who knew they were going to get the chance. If we suck loud enough, we will be the team that gets the chance to draft Connor McDavid or at worst Jack Eichel, because in the NHL draft you can only fall one spot. But in my mind, I just have this idea that you incentivize teams to suck for longer so that they can get more spins of the wheel, because that franchise player is now, it's now a roll of the dice whether they get the chance to draft that, to expect that 0.129 win shares per 48 or that 2.403 wins above replacement per MLB season. If you do that, you kind of say, okay, well, you can get into the lottery. It's now about not about being the top of the draft. It's about how many tickets to the dance can you get, because then maybe you'll get the chance. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's one of the things, you know, because and we talk about a lot on Over and Back, which is my NBA history podcast. We had a history of tanking episode that we did about last year, because everybody, you know, freaks out about the Philadelphia 76ers and what they're doing. And oh, my God, this has never happened before. Teams have never tanked before. And it's like, OK, it's happened plenty of times in history. And it's kind of funny that this article, it doesn't do that, but if anybody thinks that, like, oh, a draft lottery will solve all the problems, I will say, go to the NBA, where, like, it's a constant problem of, like, oh, this team's tanking, this team's trying to get, you know, this. The problem with the lottery, and this is what a lot of people do bring up as well, is that once you say that there's a lottery, and once you say that, you know, the top, what are we saying? Because MLB is a lot different, because, of course, half the league will go into the playoffs in you know, the NBA. Mm-hmm. MLB, what I mean, are you only like the low 25 teams are getting in there? Like, all those teams are getting into the lottery?
Right.
Like,
that's, in the MLB, you can miss the playoffs
by a game.
Still,
like, yeah, you can,
right,
win 96
be
games
a good team.
And then get the number one overall pick and go, thank you, bye. And it's like,
yeah,
oh,
right,
damn
yeah.
It. Like, because you don't want that either. And that's one of the issues that the NBA runs into, is you'll get 8 seeds. And this won't be a problem in the MLB, because basically you get in the playoffs in the MLB, that's all you really need. Like,
right.
You know, we've seen that even last year, the Kansas City Royals, or 2 years ago, rather, the Kansas City Royals, you know, make it to the wild card game and then go all the way to the World Series. They lose the World Series, and the next year they come back and then they make the World Series and win it.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years in a row, you know, they're in the World Series. You just got to get in the playoffs. Anything can happen come playoff time. Like, that, it doesn't matter. Like, as long as you're in, you're in. The NBA is not that. If you're the 8th seed, you know, especially in this year's Western Conference, like, you're not winning a game. Like, the Warriors are going to destroy. Go on your merry way, have your two home, you know, playoff games, go, thank you, bye. But then you miss the lottery. So you kind of,
right.
It's like, well, that was stupid. Like, why did we do that for?
That is the thick of NBA hell.
Right. So you get teams then that say, well, it's just a lot easier if we, case in Curry was still there when he was still a young player. There was a portion of the year where they realized, hey, we're not going to do anything once we come to the playoffs. Let's just kind of suck for a little bit. And they sort of, it was weird. Like, Steph Curry stopped playing a lot. Like, there was just a bunch of weird stuff that happened just a few years ago. And they ended up getting Harrison Barnes, who was, you know, another part of this sort of puzzle. And they did that by saying, hey, we're like the 7th seed right now. If we just really suck, we can get into the draft lottery. And then they got a pretty decent pick out of it. You're not going to get that with baseball, but I think what you're going to get is, as I said, and it might not happen a lot, and you can weight the picks, of course, where the worst team gets, you know, the most spins or whatever, but that shit happens. Weird stuff happens. You're going to get a scenario where, you know, there's going to be a 90-win team or whatever that just missed the playoffs because they were in a tough division or whatever, that's going to get the number one overall pick or the number two overall pick, or get even into that top five when there are teams that, you know, really need an influx of talent that were bad that are now not going to get that because that team that won 90, like, it's going to take 1 year where the Yankees just missed the playoffs and they get the number one overall pick for people to say, this system's broken. Like,
right,
this is stupid.
Sucks. Get out of
like,
here.
And that's all it's going to take is like 1 year of that and then it's over and then it's off the rails or whatever. I say just whatever. If teams tank, they do. In baseball, I think it's so much harder, and I think we sort of, I think, address this a little bit, or at least people can know from, you know, some stuff. Like, a generationally great player in baseball, it's hard to come by. I mean, like, I ran some numbers as well. Or actually, I found these from the Hardball Times, and they ran some numbers of the top five draft picks, the chances of them becoming a 10 WAR player and then a 3 WAR player.
That was a very interesting, yes, these are very interesting numbers.
So the numbers 1 through 5, so we think of those as like, okay, those are the cream of the crop, those 35% chance that guy's going to become a 10 WAR player.
And 10 WAR is a barrier. Describe a 10 WAR player. If you put up 10 wins above replacement, is this accrual like over their career, or
I don't know exactly. I think it's their career, I believe, but okay. I could be wrong.
But still, 10 wins above replacement for your career is pretty good. You were contributing at the major league level for a good while if you have accrued 10 wins above replacement.
Right.
Three isn't bad, but obviously 10 is better. It's not the rarefied air of like, oh, yeah, maybe you deserve to be, you know, in the hall, but you are a solid, very good MLB contributor.
Right. So you got that that we sort of mentioned with that. And then chances of being a 3+ WAR player is 55 in the 1 through 5 picks. So at least you have a 55% chance that this guy is going to be something. Like, you can put him in your lineup. You can do, you know, you pitch. That's it. You go to 6 to 10. That's 25% to be a 10 WAR player, and then 43% to be a 3 WAR. So you still got a guy that can kind of contribute, but less so of that superstar guy. 11 through 15, 23% to be a 10+ WAR. I'm just going to do the 10+ from here on out, so we just sort of know these like generationally good guys. 16 to 20, 17%. 21 to 30, 11%. 31 to 40, 7%, you know, 41 to 50, 7%. So we sort of know that, okay, once you leave that top 10, basically, it's below 25% that this guy's going to be anything, like a really good player for our team.
Right.
So it makes that really important then to sort of have that to an extent, but then it's also like, well, it's only 25. Whereas, you know, the basketball, I think if you did those same numbers at that top 10, the percentages of getting a guy that's like a franchise guy is a lot higher. I mean, there's only 5 people on the court. They don't have to run through the minors and all that sort of stuff. So it's an interesting proposition, but I really do think the 1 year you have the Yankees win 91 games, or the Red Sox make, you know, and they just miss the playoffs by a few games, or they you know, they lose some tiebreaker game, then they get in this lottery and then they get the number one overall pick. Everyone's going to go nuts about it and it's going to be done. You know, we all know that it's going to happen. So, you know what? Let teams tank if they really want to. I don't care. It's not a big deal. And I think for more people, we see that fan bases, and we know about it in Chicago as well. It was kind of rocky, and they had to sort of explain to people, hey, we're going to lose for a few years. It's going, you know, this is what's going to happen or whatever. But I think time and time again, they've seen that sort of, that very rarely does the team say, hey, we're going to suck for a long time, but then we're going to be really good, and then not really deliver on that. You know what I mean? Like, it very often does happen where that team, we see it right now, the Astros and the Cubs, both are teams that were like, hey, we're going to be really bad for like 3 years, but then we're going to be really good.
But
and
then you wait, we will be good.
And now they are. And now they have like a generation of like good players.
Right.
So that's kind of the fun of it, is that, okay, look, these guys kind of deliver on that. If there was a ton of teams that were like, hey, we're going to be bad for a while, but then we're going to get good, and they never do it, then that's a different story. Like, there were the Pirates for a long time, but they were just not good. Like, everybody understood that they just drafted like crap and they just weren't any good. That's a lot different to me than sort of transparent rebuilding, which and transparent tanking, which I think is fine, especially in baseball. It's not that big of a deal.
I don't get what these people, you know, it's a problem. It's plaguing the NBA, the NHL, and maybe the MLB too. What are they going to do about it? People in Chicago were excited that the Cubs were drafted. Like, there was a buzz about the Major League Baseball draft in the city of Chicago for the first time that I can recall. And then you get in the NHL, you get teams cheering their teams losing because they know that the Sabres, let's say, are going to get Connor McDavid. You're going to get to see a generational franchise player if this team sucks for a little bit. Where Whereas if you have a lottery system, especially a lottery system where the teams with the highest chance of picking the highest can actually fall 3, 4, 5 spots, given just, you know, luck of the draw, what you're going to get is you're going to get teams that intentionally suck to get better from what is, I guess, approximately a welfare program. You're going to see them suck to get better, but it's not going to happen because they're going to lose. They're going to lose that bet. They're going to lose that ping pong ball drop, and they're going to have to suck for longer. So if the problem that people have is, oh, well, look at these teams just being open about sucking to try to get better. Think about it this way. If you suck for a long, if you suck out way out loud, but you get the number one overall pick, you have to, if you do that 2-3 years in a row, like the Cubs and the Astros did, okay. But imagine the Cubs sucked way out loud, but then instead of getting the number one overall pick and being able to draft Chris Bryant, let's say a ping pong ball didn't drop the right way, and now they're picking 8th. Now they're picking 9th. Of course, they've got these great computer systems, but still, there's a definite drop-off. And if your ultimate goal is teams being sucking for as short as possible, then a lottery in that context seems rather counterintuitive to me. It seems like you're fighting against something, or you're trying to implement something that will, in fact, extend and enhance what you claim to be the reason for which you claim to be implementing it.
Yeah, I absolutely see what you're saying.
Right? So the 76ers, instead of having the number one overall pick for 2 years in the NBA, they are at 3, they're at 4, and they draft a guy who gets hurt, who, you know, Nerlens Noel. You have to go with Noel instead of who was number one overall that year?
The Nerlens Noel year? I think, who was it? I'm blanking on that right now. Who was it?
That wasn't Karl Anthony Towns, was it?
No, that was just last year that Anthony Towns was there. Who was the Nerlens Noel pick? Let's
all right, up here we go.
Oh, that was it. The aforementioned Anthony Bennett.
No, there you go.
Don't look at that draft. Don't close your computer right now. Do not.
I kind of want to do it.
No, don't do it. You're doing it, aren't you?
Okay. I kind of want to do it.
Okay, all right.
I really do kind of want to do it.
Read that top 10. Yeah, read that top 10.
Jesus. All right. Let me. I got to find it. Draft years. Yep. What year was it? 2013?
This is 2013.
All right.
Don't do it.
What?
Okay.
Let's see. What do we got here? Round one. Anthony Bennett. Victor Oladipo. Picked at number 2. Otto Porter, number 3. Cody Zeller, number 4. Alex Len, number 5. Nerlens Noel went 6th overall. Ben McLemore, number 7. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, number 8. Number 9, Trey Burke. And number 10, C.J. McCollum. Only one guy in that entire list has what basketballreference.com claims is an above-average win shares per 48 minutes, and that's Cody Zeller.
Yep.
Wow. That is a not good draft.
There you go.
Now I remember. I thought I remembered around that time people saying, when I was listening to Sports Talk Radio, they said, you know, this isn't going to be a very good draft. Next year, though, it's going to be really good. This year, not so much. I was like, oh, come on. How bad could a draft really be? Right here, it can be. Because when you have Kelly Olynyk going 13th overall, that's...
Which is pretty surprising because the next year, you know, everybody talked about that draft, but it sort of hasn't. Kind of, you know, you got like an Andrew Wiggins who was number one or whatever, and he's, you know, good, but he's not like, I don't know if he's at that transcendently great level yet. Mm-hmm. Jabari Parker was number 2. He's fine, but again, like, not a guy that now he's on Milwaukee. Now they're a perennial, you know, contender. Joel Embiid hasn't played yet, so that's not a great third overall pick.
Right.
Aaron Gordon is very good at dunk contests, but very bad at playing basketball. You know, Dante Exum's hurt right now. Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, Nick Stauskas, Noah right. Vonleh, Alfred Payton, Doug McDermott, like
Dougie McBuckets.
Yeah, it should have been a better draft. Like, it's also not a very good draft either, but.
Yeah, well,
but last year's is going out real well so far.
2015, yeah,
yeah. Good. You got Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis. You know, there's a lot of good guys in there. Willie Cauley-Stein. Yeah,
I love Kristaps. He's good. He's going to be fun to watch for a while.
Yeah,
he's going to be better than Dirk, Probably. What do you think?
No, don't say that.
No?
Not to me. Not yet. Got a ways to go. Well, I mean, but what do you
think, like, a career arc, what do you think he could be? Could he be that?
He could. It's hard to say right now, just because we've only seen the 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He could, yeah.
The book's going to get out on him, and then it's going to be on him to adjust his team's playing defensively differently, et cetera. All right, yeah. Well, so I guess we have to wait and see on Kristaps, just like we do Carlos Correa and Gerrit Cole. But it's going to be good. God, he's only 19 years old.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good to have.
Oh, man, 19, and you're, what is 6'10", 6'11", a prime NBA prospect, and not a care in the world, playing in New York and all that entails. God, that must be fun. You know what? This show has run long. Do you want to couch everything we had planned for later? Do you want to do another show later this week?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, we'll couch everything. We'll couch the break. I will bookmark the football IQ test, the Wonderlic test, because I think that's gotta drive a whole show. I mean, we could take the full quiz, 50 questions in 12 minutes, or 15 questions in 3 minutes. I figured the 15 questions in 3.5 minutes.
Real quick, let me do the Steph Curry thing.
Okay,
just because I think it's sensitive to sort of the time that was going on, because obviously Saturday was just this unbelievable game. I don't know if you watched the Warriors Thunder on Saturday, but like an all time legendary great game that happened there. So Curry, and this is from a few different websites, and I'll mention them when we get to it, but it's just sort of talking about how ridiculous Steph Curry is right now, like just next worldly, how, you know, what he's doing this year and what he's doing in individual games and all that sort of stuff. So Curry finished Saturday with 46 points on 12 3-pointers on 16 attempts. So not bad.
Yeah,
so prior to Curry breaking the single season 3-point record for the first time in 2013, the previous mark was set by Ray Allen with 269 triples in the 2005-2006 season, a mark which Curry has now broken on three different occasions. Oh, by the way, on Saturday, he broke the NBA record for threes in a year. I'll remind you, it is, as we record, February 29th. So they have a few more games to go. So, like, over 20.
So he set and broke his own record three times?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And now he's got the rest of the year to set. So if Steph projected pace, he will not only become the first player to make 300 triples in a single season, but the first to make 400, of course, because the previous mark was 269. So we all know that. Also funny as well, before Danny Ainge made 148 triples in the 87-88 season, no player had even cracked the triple digits in three-pointers over the course of the season, and Curry is on pace to hit 411 this year alone. So,
God.
His shot distances are also incredible, too. So this stuff, from 25 to 29 feet, he is hitting 46.1% from there. He's made 179 from 25 to 29. Now, I'll remind you, the three-point line is 22 feet. So just to get you an
idea. So from 5 feet, beginning from, what is it, 3.5 feet behind the arc?
Yes, yeah. So 3.5 to 5 feet behind the arc. He is a 179 and 388. Here's what's funny. Only 100 players in history, in all of history, have made more than 179 three-pointers in a season. And Steph has that many, two steps behind the line this year. So think of that. So he's got 107. So if that was the 3-point line or whatever, and he's hit 179 of those, there are only 100 players in the history of the NBA that have ever made any of those three. And that's what he's doing. From
right, and
that
he's
distance.
And from the moon, he's shooting 179.
Right. And he's made 107. It's just insane. So only Klay Thompson has hit that many threes. His teammate Klay Thompson has hit 179 plus threes
from
this
anywhere.
Year. From anywhere, yeah, from the corner, from right next to right behind the line, anywhere. Only him this year, and Steph has done that alone from that distance, from 30 to 34 feet. He's 7 of 11, 63.6%.
Jesus.
From 35 to 39, he is 1 of 2 for 50%. And then the favorite of them all, 40 plus feet, he is 3 of 9 for 33.3%.
If you shoot 33% from three,
you're getting a good deal. You're getting like a good contract for.
Right. Like that's if you could, like if you're like, all right, dude, if I just sit in the corner, I can shoot 33, like almost 34%. You will find an NBA franchise to pay you lots of money to do that.
Yeah.
Steph Curry is shooting what you aspire just to make ends meet, like a mid-level exception, which is still a couple million dollars. Steph Curry is making that from 40 plus feet on 9 shots. It's not like he took 3 and made 1 of them. This is 3 of 9. That's, oh, okay.
And they're not many heaves as well. They're like legit like pull up. And if you watch Saturday's game, you know that he sometimes pulls up from 40, and that the other team knows it's going in and it kills him. So this is a real cool thing before we leave here. This is from Ian Levy at 538, and sort of personally, Ian, he's the editor of Hardwood Paroxysm, which wink, wink, nudge, nudge, is where I do my NBA history podcast, the Over and Back podcast. So make sure you check us out, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and also Over
Hardwood
Back.
Paroxysm.
Yes.
What is that? What is hardwood?
I don't know. So don't ask me.
I just
work there. So that's okay. All I know. But no, Ian Levy, he's the editor there. He's a great guy as well. He's done a lot for me personally and, you know, in general. So he's a great guy. Great, great, great guy. So he did this at 538. And this was sort of, a lot of this is out of context, but it's just kind of fun. People are just having fun with these stats because it's mm-hmm. like, and we talked about it, off air about NBA, some of the makers of NBA 2K had an article last week where they were interviewed and said, yeah, Steph Curry's kind of broke our game. We don't know what to do with him.
Right, because like, he should be good enough to make the threes that like he's making on TV.
Like, we turn the game off. Well, like, we don't allow people to make pull-up 40-footers because that shouldn't happen. But with Steph, it does. So it's like, well, what do? Like, we've shut that off where, oh, there's two people guarding on you and you dribbled and there's 1 second left and you're shooting for 40 feet. You're not going to make that shot. You should never make that shot. Oh, wait, Steph Curry makes like 33% of those shots. Like, how do we do that? Like, there's no algorithm. Like, we turn that off. Like, you can't mm-hmm. do that, but you can. Like, so he's broke. He's literally broken that game. Like, they don't know what to do with him. But this is kind of fun. It looks at, we'll project that he's going to get 400 threes this year. That's not a lofty projection. He's on pace, mm-hmm. 411 or whatever. If he does that, he will break the previous record, his own record of 3-pointers made in a year by 40%. So, this is what current sports records. This is what those current records would do if they were beaten by 40%. So if the home run record this year, Carlos Correa just goes nuts and he beats the previous home run record by 40%, here's how many he'll have. So
okay,
got the premise.
How many?
All right. So MLB for home runs, you know, current record is 73 mm-hmm. from Barry Bonds. If hypothetical person gets 40% increase, they'll have 102 this year. I'm going to go on a limb. I don't know about you.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know. Your thoughts?
That would be a cartoon season to watch.
Yeah,
at a certain point, it would just be.
Well, that's like 30% of your at bats are like home runs. Like,
yeah.
Like at one point, they're not going to pitch to you anymore. Like, you're just going to roll the ball. They're like, no.
No, just go to first base. The MLB would have its own it's like the inverse of a DeAndre Jordan rule where it's like, no, you have to pitch to him because people don't want to watch him be put on base so much. That would be incredible to watch.
MLB walks. The current record is 232. The 40% increase record would be 325. So
that'd be a bore, but you know what? That's a lot of clogged bases. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. Dusty would not be happy with that.
Does not approve.
MLB hits again. We'll stick with the MLB. 262 is the current record. The record would now be 367. So that's over 100 additional hits just kind of sprinkled in there.
Yeah.
Goals in a season, NHL goals. And now, by the way, if Ian sort of brings this up as well in the article, like Wayne Gretzky is about the only comp of like a guy that just comes into the league and just destroys the records to like such a mammoth. And his record, when he set it of 92 goals, was only 21% above the previous record. So that shows us, whereas Curry is 39.9%. So Curry is 40% above the increase. I mean, like, we say that that's close, but I mean, it's 20% difference between Gretzky, who broke the NHL. Like, they were just like,
and
fuck.
He was
the, like,
right. He was, they like, did not know what to do with Wayne Gretzky as a talent.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry is doing things, is
double.
Performing better, breaking professional records with a magnitude, I think is the right word, magnitude that has never been seen before, not even close. If he keeps his pace and hits the 400 three-pointer mark, which I don't know how reliable that projection is,
right.
because at some point isn't he going to start sitting down because they do have to play the playoffs.
They do want that record though. They've made it known from the beginning.
They want to beat the Bulls record.
Yeah, they made that known because some teams just kind of say whatever, we don't care about the regular season. We just want to make it to the playoffs or whatever, but they've sort of from the beginning said, you know what, that's something we would like to do.
Okay.
We think we're good enough to do it, so we're going to try it. So I don't think he's going to be sitting. So it'll be interesting to watch. And that's sort of everyone's kind of on that assumption as well. It could happen where they lose three in a row and then he then goes, you know what? Yeah. Okay. We're not going to get the record. That's fine. I'll sit a bunch. But I don't know. He's got a lot of pride. So we'll see what happens there. So anyway, to finish this out, goals, NHL, the current record is 92. The new record with the 40% increase would be 129. Touchdown passes, NFL touchdown passes, I believe. This is Peyton Manning, right? 55? That was a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It would be 77 now.
So oh, my God. That is arena ball.
I think
they do that in arena ball.
They do get about 70. Yeah, exactly. But that's also the league where they can like bounce it off like the the nets, and you can catch it, and the wide receiver gets a running start as well. But
and there's only like six guys on the field,
right? Yeah. So and the field's like 30 feet long. So that is about we'd get arena football stats in the NFL if Steph Curry was sort of there. So that's just how ridiculous Steph Curry is right now.
Ian
has a really great article about it. 538, if you go, he just goes into insane detail of like just how incredible what he's doing right now is.
And hardwood paroxysm. Check that out.
Exactly.
That's his site. He writes at 538, but then he writes
a bunch of different places.
Paroxysm.
Yeah, he writes like five different places. He writes like Vice Sports, 538, Sporting News. Like he's a full-time writer, so he's got to pour himself out to everybody in the world.
Maybe we can, when we start making the trekking to get guests, we can have him on the show.
I think he would gladly come on. So.
Listen, I know this show is running long, and I know. Can we talk about Steph Curry just a little bit longer?
Yeah, that's fine.
Can I ask you about, because Rich, you have a theory. I brought this to you. We were banging our head against the wall for topics like we normally do. And I had a thought.
Yeah, somehow we filled 2 hours.
Yes, and somehow this is going to be a 2-hour show. But still, so what? It's okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll split it up into two episodes. I don't know.
Ooh, interesting.
No, because I didn't really have a break.
There wasn't a good spot, yeah.
That's yeah.
Fine. All okay. one. All one big, long episode. So hopefully I have nothing going on this week. So
yeah. Here's the thing. I had this, I believe it was that game where I saw the game you just talked about, the historical Steph Curry, where he finished with, what was it, 48 points on 13 of 16?
Yeah, I closed 46 points, I believe it was.
40, okay. I noticed that when he hit that moonshot, from like 40 feet or whatever to win the game at the last moment. I noticed a lot of something I didn't expect to see from Steph Curry. I saw him pounding his chest, and it occurred in front of the other team's bench. I saw him screaming and yelling and doing something that more Joakim Noah than what I had previously seen from Steph Curry, which is he would just, lightly pump his fist and just walk away with that shit-eating grin as he's chewing on his mouth guard. And is Steph Curry feeling his oats a little bit more? Is he more comfortable now? I'm going to use a term from curmudgeon-y baseball people, but I don't mean it this way. Is he trying to show up the other team? Is he getting to that point now? And is there a point? And if so, is there a point at which NBA players say no, where they say, dude, stop it? Or they start speaking to the media and saying, hey, that's not really cool. I don't like that. It's not necessarily from the play the show some respect or play the game with respect angle. But do NBA players start pushing back against Steph Curry doing that when he is just dropping his balls on their chin or his balls on their chin, killing them from 3-point. Is he doing that?
My theory is, and I think it doesn't really necessarily go to the other team so much, whereas like I don't think like he's pounding his chest because he's against Oklahoma City or whatever. And I've heard people mention that theory is because Oklahoma City is a very, Russell Westbrook hits a shot and he screams and yells or whatever. And he's a very emotional guy. And that's, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think other teams really care all that much. It's just sort of like they sort of understand that's what happens. And Durant can do that as well. If, he hits a big shot, which, he did hit a few in that game, he'll be very emotional about it and sort of do that. I don't necessarily know that Steph Curry is doing that to that team or to that particular opponent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, and it ramped up again this week, and it's just this slew of like older NBA players that are like, oh, I don't know if the Warriors are all that good, or oh, well, back in my day, like we had this, and like they wouldn't have been able to score that much because like we would have like tackled them in the middle of the game and then they wouldn't score or whatever. Like, oh, I would have like taken out Steph Curry's knees, so there'd be no way. Or like Oscar Robinson was saying, stuff like, oh, back in my day, there's no way he would score that, and you got a bunch of guys that are saying, oh, my team would beat them.
They're trying to marginalize what right. they're doing. Like, oh, Pistol Pete, can you imagine if Pete Maravich had the three-point line? He could have done what so you, Steph Curry did.
Right, you get a lot of that. Of a deal. Like, and Phil Jackson earlier this week, I think he, or Saturday, he did something like, oh, well, let's not forget about Muhammad Abdul-Rauf. Like, he was good, too. And it's like, what are you talking? Like, no, he wasn't as good as Steph Curry. Like, he's like, well, all this hype about Steph, well, that guy was good, too. And it's like, okay, then that guy could be good, too. And it doesn't. So I think it's more of a reaction, at least in my mind, I think, a more of a visceral reaction towards those people and all the people that are always sort of doubting the Warriors of saying, okay, there was people last year, like even LeBron mentioned, and that's remember we talked about that, I think in one of our first shows, is that you had wondered why the Warriors went so in on the Cavs and why they were just like that game, they were just like, let's fucking kill these guys.
Right.
And it's because people were saying, oh, they you know, there was a bunch of injuries last year in the Western Conference. That's how they made it to the finals or whatever. Or I think LeBron even specifically said, oh, we were real banged up last year. Like, I'd like to see us at a full strength or whatever. So I do wonder if it's something of that respect where he's not necessarily lashing out at that particular opponent or at that particular crowd or whatever, but more or less sort of in a way of sort of overall saying, look at what we're doing again. You continue to say we can't do this. We're, you know, and it's not just this sort of like, it's not like the Michael Jordan thing where he's in his own head and he's like, oh, they said I suck or whatever. And they're like, no, Michael, everyone says you're the best. Like, people aren't saying right. that about, like, we're saying that, you and I are saying that, but old players are lining up and tripping over themselves to discredit these guys and say, oh, if this was, you know, in my day, X would happen and thus they wouldn't win here. You know, Steven Jackson said that his freaking like 2006 Warriors team would beat this Warriors team. It's like, no, shut up. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, just these right. people are like, oh, my team would beat them. Oh, in the 80s, they would lose. Oh, if, you know, they were against Michael, they would get hand checked. Or Gary Payton's like, oh, you know, these guys are soft. Or, you know, this, it's just a constant stream of these old NBA players falling over themselves to discredit what they're doing because of some other weird thing or whatever. I think that's what it more is. I don't know. I'm just sort of, that's how I take it, because it doesn't seem like it's ever directed at people. It's not like he hits a shot and then stares a guy down. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And he's never been that way. And that's why it's sort of weird. And people were saying, oh, you know, he was sort of shit talking, I think, over the weekend, that people were saying, oh, he's shit talking the Atlanta Hawks or something like that. And he sort of, he pounded his chest towards the bench or whatever. And maybe that is sort of something there, but I think it's just the emotions of being in what they're in right now, having this historic season, trying to go for an all-time record, time having everybody say, and it's not like making it up, like having old players just constantly say, oh, these guys aren't that good, or oh, back in my day this would happen. That's what I think, and just sort of a, hey, look what we can do. Like, look, like, you can say whatever you want about us, but we still are winning. Or you can say we can't win 72 games, but then, you know, we're down 10 with a minute left and we win. Like, that still happens. Like, we're that good. I don't know if it's that. That's always been my theory, though, or that's what okay. my theory is.
No, that's that seems a lot more plausible than the, oh, now he's showing, he's doing something that that, you know, didn't really fit with what he had been doing before. Like, because he's been historically great for, you know, 3 years in a, like, he's broken his single season 3-point record three or four times. So he's been that good for a while and he hasn't done it. So why is he all of a sudden doing it now? It's much more plausible that he is so boisterous because, you know, people keep trying to shift the goalposts and move them farther and farther away, and he keeps kicking that son of a bitch through them no matter how far away they get, and he's overcome with emotion. All right, I'll buy that. Do you think NBA players, is there a point where even they say, no, stop, like, stop gesticulating, stop, you know, showing people up? Because I have a hard time believing that all of the MLB stuff and baseball, the play the game the right way, brown guy, you know, I have a hard time believing that that is just that in a vacuum, that that's racially motivated. And I want to believe that it's more about emotion in the moment and being dominated by somebody. And it's a fight or flight type of response. That's what I want it to be. And it's just, if I could see that in the NBA, I could kind of remove some of the racial component to it. But, so please, NBA players, start speaking up, punch Steph Curry in the face for me when he does that. I like him. I like the guy. He's really fun to watch, but just punch him in the face that way.
For my point, you want your point to be, you know, addressed in some level. So yes, somebody has to punch him. So
punch him in the face, in the nuts.
Look at UKG. I'm looking at UKG.
Yeah, he seems like the kind of
guy.
You're only
home, KG.
Right? He seems like the kind of guy.
It's like DeMarcus Cousins, KG, and like J.R. Smith or whatever are probably your good contenders to just just turn around and punch him for no reason. Like,
right, just deck him. And, you know, because I just, again, I don't, it looks, again, when it, if it looks like a duck and it, you know, it squawks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And, you know, this whole thing in the MLB with a lot of white guys, some Latin guys, some of the older Latin players saying, you know, play the game the right way, respect the game, blah, blah, blah. It seems to be, it would be a hell of a coincidence if there wasn't a racial component. And I'm trying to ferret out if there's any other comp where, if you can remove the racial component, where guys are saying people that, you know, there's an appeal to some game, like respect the game. And I want to remove it from, you know, crotchety old white baseball guys. But until somebody punches Steph Curry in the dick, I guess that won't happen. So
we can hope. Soon we can hope
against hope. All right. Well, that has been the marathon episode of the KMP show. We can do this. And imagine if we had breaks. Imagine if we could throw to a break and, you know, we could take like a 5-minute like piss break and like go get coffee and check Twitter and stuff. Like, we could do this. Come on. WMVP, WSCR, and Sirius XM, buy this show. We're for sale, aren't we?
Oh, you know, God, what it, yes. Oh, we're totally for sale, yeah.
We are definitely for sale. For the love of God, go to Amazon.com. Or no, go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon.
Stupid.
No, go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. Bookmark that son of a bitch. And then when you go and shop, you'll be helping out the show. So go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. We'll put a bow, wrap up this episode of the KMP Show number 9. We thank you all for listening. You can find the show again at kmpshow.com on Audioboom. Subscribe there. You can also find the show on iTunes. Just search the KMP Show. Follow Rich on Twitter at Voices Wrestling. You can also follow the show run by Rich on Twitter at KANDP Show. That's KANDP Show. You can also follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. So for Rich Craich,
basically, fuck you.
I'm John Playtech.
Beaver anus.
Thank you guys for listening. What?
I'm just laughing. Just laughing. Okay. The beaver anus gets me all the time.
Beaver anus? Just,
beaver just anus.
Yeah.
The way you say it, too. You're like,
I'm not going to lie.
Anus. Like, it's just,
right.
It seems like they're like not the same. Like, you didn't say that in one.
Oh, really?
Like, but it did. Like, people know.
It did.
It was.
Well,
it was
I'll be honest. In the moment, there was a sliver. If you imagine a pie chart, there was just like a 1% sliver of me that was like, if I punch up, if I billboard beaver anus, this will be a great drop. I was going to say beaver anus anyway, because we were talking about the stuff that's in raspberry iced tea.
Right, right.
I was going to say it anyway, but there was just that, I was like, okay, I'm going to get to say beaver anus and I'll get a chuckle out of it. But then I thought, but if I really billboard it, if I really punch it up, it would make a great sound drop. So I went beaver anus instead of just saying beaver anus. There's a little bit of that. So it was a little bit of a work, right? Huh?
Yeah, you're a smart man. You're that's another wrestling term. You're something else.
Yeah, see, yeah. I follow the WWE on Twitter. They say don't they use that stuff? Work, shoot, all that crap.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They sort of got rid of that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This has been the KMP Show episode 9. Thank you everybody for sharing the show, helping the show grow. Again, you are probably our best source for organic viewers. So keep telling people about the KMP Show. We really appreciate it. Our numbers, we've been looking at them. They have been growing and we are doing better and better each and every day, each and every week. And we will try our best to keep the content flowing. Anyway, for Rich Craich, I'm John Playtech. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time. We are out. Bye.